Hello and welcome back to the Dive and Dig podcast. This week I'm delighted to introduce my guest, Dr. Georgia Holley, who is the Research Project Officer for the Cultural Heritage Framework Programme at the University of Edinburgh. If you recall, in the last interview I did with Dr. Athena Tracadas, as part of our mini-series that addresses maritime cultural heritage and climate threat, Athena mentioned this programme in the context of the Ocean Decade. So I thought I'd speak to Georgia and find out more about the Cultural Heritage Framework programme. So Georgia, it's great. Thank you so much for finding time to join me on the Dive and Dig podcast. This is, as you know, we're on the third one now in a series that's trying to sort of highlight the challenges, the climate challenges that we face, in particular with regard to, obviously, maritime cultural heritage. And I know that you're working under the umbrella of the Ocean Decade, and you head up something, and I always get this wrong, the Cultural Heritage Framework Programme, acronym CHFP. And listeners, if I get that in the wrong order, that's because I'm dyslexic. This is really what I'd like to talk about today. I was speaking to Athena earlier, and she was telling me about this programme, but it's amazing. It's the only cultural heritage programme in the whole of the Ocean Decade system, as I understand it. So what does it do? How does it work?
So yes, you're right. The Cultural Heritage Framework Programme, CHFP, which I know is a mouthful, so I will continue with CHFP for the rest of it, is all about integrating marine cultural heritage into the Ocean Decade, which I'm sure, as you've been talking to Athena, you'll know that this is something that has been a struggle for a very long time, and not just within the Ocean Decade, but within the representation of cultural heritage in the ocean sciences themselves. So while ODHN, which is where Athena is looking at kind of high level stuff and policy and integrating cultural heritage from there, the Cultural Heritage Framework Programme really provides the examples, provides the meat, looks at all the different projects that are working all over the world, from the bottom up, from various different levels, some projects which are by universities, some are NGOs, some are indigenous or local community led. We take all of these projects and we build them into one network and then showcase them to the Ocean Decade.
I mean, that is really interesting, and it's really nice to be able to demonstrate, isn't it, through example. Mm-hmm. So how do you identify, and I think the word is endorse, isn't it? How do you make mm-hmm. those connections, and how do you support these different groups or projects or whatever, however they manifest?
So it's a bit of a mix. It's quite a job to source all of these projects because there's so many all over the world who are doing incredible work in engaging with cultural heritage and ocean sciences and sustainability and climate change and the Ocean Decade. So it's a mix of us searching for these projects and also projects finding us through the Ocean Decade. And what happens, as you say, is they will become endorsed. So we will talk to a project and start off the endorsement process. And that then goes through an application which goes through the decade, through us, and then eventually hopefully becomes endorsed. And once it is endorsed, it joins our network, it joins the Ocean Decade, and it has access to all of these different aspects of the decade, like different types of training, networking, engaging with each other, engaging with different stakeholders, stuff like that.
Wow, that's really, really brilliant, isn't it? I didn't realise that those, you know, I was about to say, well, what are the advantages of being endorsed? but clearly there are many. And presumably when you're working particularly with, I imagine some of these groups are quite isolated, you know, physically and in terms of the global network, this is a massive resource and support that you provide.
It's great. And I think that the endorsement, the benefits of endorsement are somewhat twofold. So you have the benefit of being part of this massive Ocean Decade community. But then also part of CHFP, part of what we do, is really work quite intimately with the projects to get some of the goals happening that we want to see within the Ocean Decade for cultural heritage. So for example, we have a number of projects which work with intangible cultural heritage. So things like indigenous knowledge or practice, And we work with these projects to make sure that they are represented properly in the Ocean Decade and ethically and equitably, which is something that's really quite difficult and complex to organise and make happen. So yeah, there's lots of kind of different benefits, but we work together as a team to try and represent all of the different aspects of marine cultural heritage and then translate that to what's relevant in the decade itself.
I've got two questions. One is, you're based in Edinburgh, in the University of Edinburgh, and you're leading on the CHFP, but you're indicating you've got people that support you in this. How big is the CHFP team then?
So we are a team that is, firstly, so we're funded by the Lloyd's Register Foundation. It was Athena and Anthony Firth who wrote the grant and who came up with it. So they have a lot of input, of course, still on this. And on behalf of ODHN, Edinburgh manage and run the grant. So that is myself. Also, I'm overseen by Professor John Henderson at the University of Edinburgh. And we also have a fabulous team that work with us, which particularly run one aspect of CHFP, which is the CHFP magazine called Sea Voice, of early career researchers who work in heritage and biology and geosciences. We have four women who work with us from PhD all the way to undergraduate level.
Wow, that's brilliant. So you're really cross-cutting even, you know, sort of globally with different experiences, with different expertise and disciplines. That's really interesting. So I really would love to talk about Sea Voice because I've had a look at it and it's just beautiful. It's wonderful. And I'm sure our listeners would like to hear more about it. But could you just give me an example of how one project maybe where you brought these different groups, you've endorsed them, and then, I don't know, through their own efforts and the support that's provided, have achieved, in your mind anyway, what you feel is a success?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, actually. And there's loads of examples of these projects kind of working individually, but also in groups within CHFP. So something that we are just starting, actually, which I'm quite excited about, is different clusters within our own network. We now have enough projects that we have so many different people, some working on, you know, some very hardcore archaeology all the way to, as we're talking about, intangible heritage and ocean literacy and things like that. So we've got a group now working together for Indigenous communities and Indigenous cultural heritage and how that can be better represented within the decade. And we're actually writing up a blue paper with some of the communities that we work with, aimed at the Ocean Decade, as to how to better integrate them and how we can provide more resources for them, how funding needs to change, but from the perspective of the communities themselves. So that's something that I'm really, really excited about and has come from CHFP working together and the projects all meeting each other.
Oh, that really is so important because we're all, you know, we've been on the co-creation bottom-up, I guess I'm putting my in parentheses now, bandwagon for a while, but that sounds like it's really generating the results that you need to be thinking about the real needs and integrating things properly. I'll really look forward to reading that. That sounds brilliant. So let's talk about Sea Voice. I keep calling it Sea Voices, but Danny's told me it's Sea Voice. And it looks, I mean, visually, so it's basically a magazine, but it's online, as I understand it. Maybe you could just explain to the listeners how Sea Voice works.
Sure. So Sea Voice is an online magazine, but we are actually now doing print as well, which is really exciting. It came from a lot of the work that we do, and particularly a lot of the work that I was doing pre-CHFP and during CHFP as well, has been working with coastal communities all over the place, you know, in from my home in Scotland to Mozambique to the Philippines. And part of that work has all been about including coastal communities in marine conservation, including cultural heritage and conservation. But what we were seeing was that these voices weren't really being heard on a bigger stage, and not just in policy, but also in the general public, in conservation. A lot of the work that was happening was very local, which is great, but it wasn't getting to a bigger stage. And when we do enter the bigger stages, like the UN Ocean Decade, we see a lot of the same voices. So Sea Voice was born from looking at that and trying to raise some of the unheard voices onto an equal platform alongside the other people, alongside scientists and policymakers, but also alongside artists and different types of communities and sports people. So Sea Voice is all about looking at all of these different voices and putting them in one platform and listening to them as a whole, so we can really understand what the ocean is and what ocean identity is and how this all can work together. So now we have 4 online volumes a year, which usually 10 to 15 articles each, and 1 annual volume, which we were really, really lucky this year to have Sylvia Earle, who, you know, ocean legend, and Donna Bertarelli, also legend, who were able to write the foreword for that. So yeah, we were really, really excited to be able to do that this year. And that was actually funded by the Pew Bertarelli Ocean Legacy Foundation.
Yeah, no, that's quite a coup, isn't it? Sylvia Earle. Did you meet her?
No, I wish. Oh my gosh. It's my dream.
No, it's brilliant. I mean, making the efforts to, as you say, to provide that level playing field where everybody's voices are equal. It's a really hard challenge, particularly in heritage and cultural, marine cultural heritage especially. So, and it really does seem to me, I mean, I've heard that you've got, what sort of numbers of readers? I mean, it's quite substantial.
Yeah, so we have readership across, I think, 80 countries now, which we're really, really pleased with. And that has been one of the most important stats for us as well, because we really didn't want to just be talking to ourselves. So having international readership was really important. And as you say, having different voices.
No, that's brilliant. So the cutting edge question. How do you think this is helping to tackle some of the challenges of climate change? Have you got a couple of, or an example, maybe you could focus in on that, as this is the theme?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got a nice example of one of the stories that we have coming up, which I can talk about. But I think also there's some basic things that it does. I mean, in terms of looking at representation from the CHFP projects all the way to storytelling and raising all of these voices, all of it really makes climate science more relatable and more personable, and telling human stories that people can engage with means we're more engaged with climate issues. But it also respects things like Indigenous knowledge, stuff that we've been talking about, so it makes it more accessible. Only having purely Western scientific methods limits our ability to properly conserve the marine environment or cultural heritage. It also builds more inclusive climate solutions, which engages with different types of people and different types of knowledge. It shows that the ocean is more than just a resource in itself. It holds cultural and spiritual meaning for people and what that is. And it also can highlight the long-term impacts of climate change. So looking, I know you talked to Dr. Colin Breen as part of this series, and he talked about deep time and how we can understand climate change through that lens as well. So I think all of those aspects make climate change more real for people. It makes it more accessible, inclusive, engaging, and better. But in terms of an example, we have a story coming up in our upcoming volume, which will be Water Woman. It will be released on International Women's Day on the 8th of March, which we're very excited about. One of the stories that we have in here is from an Inuit woman, and it talks about how her culture is changing because of melting ice and because of changing fish stocks. And not only that, it also talks about how she journeyed from her home village all the way to the UN Ocean Decade Conference in Barcelona to talk about this and the impacts that that had, and how engaging with her community and her storytelling could actually directly impact policy. So it's a story I'm really, really excited about. And yeah, I think it provides a really nice example of bringing it all together.
Yeah, no, that's amazing, isn't it? That really is. That's a very human story, but
yeah,
hopefully provides that visibility and makes those people that are making decisions listen as well. I mean, it sounds like you've got an absolutely fascinating job. I imagine it's quite a challenge at times, but obviously your background, that sort of, you have that integrated background yourself, as I know from, you know, you're studying a biology and then doing maritime cultural heritage. So it's perfect, really. That's really fascinating. Well, I'm really grateful to you. Thank you very much for spending this time and really painting a very, you know, very clear picture of why this is important and why people need to get online and read Sea Voice and learn more about this. Because, it's beautiful as well. It's not just really informative, but it's really beautifully presented. So thank you so much. And yeah. Good luck.
Oh, thank you, Lucy. It's an absolute honour. I love talking to you on podcast or off.
Georgia is a star, isn't she? And what a job. So interesting. And they have achieved so much on so many levels in such a short period of time. And I would definitely recommend you check out Sea Voice. It's really good. Next podcast is the last in our series, or rather our mini series, on maritime cultural heritage and climate threat, and I'll be talking to Dr. Alex Kent about an exciting project called Coastal Connections. So thanks to Georgia, and thanks to you for listening to the Dive and Dig podcast that is brought to you by the Honor Frost Foundation, a charity that supports maritime archaeological research in the Eastern Mediterranean.